The Mets just don't deserve Jacob deGrom and what to do about Michael Conforto. We will also discuss the Knickerbockers and everything that they have done so right this year, and why I'm particularly impressed with what's transpired since the All-Star break, despite the fact that they have now an under 500 record and under 500 since the All-Star break. It's all on the table, and the next few hours is all about you and me at 800-919-3776 on Twitter. It's at Chris Carlin. By all means, hit me up there. Instagram, follow that guy, Carlin. I want to start with the Yankees since they will get going in about an hour from now. Friday night, we spent a lot of time in the abbreviated time that we had together discussing the Yankees and specifically Aaron Judge. Now, look, he did not go on the injured list, so for those who I would have offered $10 to, you should have taken me up on that because I was convinced he was headed for the injured list, and I think most of us were, but he wasn't. He was back in the lineup. It didn't make a bit of difference as the Yankees got shut out yesterday, 4-0. Domingo Germán was terrible once again, and he was sent out, and it seems as if he was sent out to the alternate site that because the Yankees have some options here in the next couple of weeks as far as a few days off and whether or not they will need a fifth starter. And Aaron Boone said this morning that he could be back. All of that's fine. The Yankees are flawed in their construction, and frankly, we just all haven't acknowledged it or wanted to pay attention to it over the last several years. It's a major, major problem. The construction of the team is problematic. You can complain if you want about the unwillingness to spend money to cover up problems, to go over the salary cap threshold this year in particular when they're trying to reset it. The bigger issue is where the money is allocated and how the Yankees are unable to really bounce back from that, really cover up those problems overall. It's not even necessarily about the fact that they just don't have enough right now on their pitching staff, the fact that they have players that are similar. It's where that money has been put and the unflexibility that they have or inflexibility that they have that is killing them at the moment. And I'm not even specifically talking about Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole is worth $36 million. We know that. DJ LeMahieu is worth $15 million a year. That's an incredible bargain for what he is. But when you start to look at where else the money is being spent with the Yankees, you really have to question it. They are stuck in this Giancarlo Stanton endless contract that will see them take him for another 6, 7, 8 years, whatever it is at this point, at $30 million a year. Aroldis Chapman is making $15 million a year. At his point in his career, he is still an excellent pitcher, but we have seen him give it up in big spots. We have seen Aaron Hicks basically being a walking muscle strain, in addition to being underwhelming as a player. We have seen Aaron Judge be the exact same player as Giancarlo Stanton. And now he's making $10 million a year. And over the last couple of seasons, Aaron Judge, really for the last 3 years, has missed 40% of the Yankees' games. 40%. Stanton over the last 2 years has missed 64%. The Yankee games. It's staggering when you have two players that you have $40+ million invested in for the season, and they are basically the exact same player. We are at a point right now where, once again, the finger is not being pointed enough at the guy who is responsible for spreading out this money and putting the Yankees in a better situation. Look, can talk all you want about Stanton and about his ability when he is healthy and how he is here through 2027 at least. At least. At more than $30 million a year. The Yankees made a move at a time where they didn't get the dominant player that they thought they were going to get with Shohei Ohtani. That has run into its own problems. That's, you know, outside of what we've seen so far this year, not exactly been great for the Angels. But they are really in an area where they can't necessarily just get rid of him without eating the money. Nobody's going to want him. He's got a full no-trade clause, so he'll determine where he will and will not go. And they are stuck. They are stuck with players in positions that are too similar. Let's just to give you an idea. Let's look at how it's constructed just for today, okay? You have a lineup today where you have LeMahieu playing first base, which is totally fine. He's capable at the position. He's the one guy who gives you what he's worth. You've got Hicks batting third and center field, which remains a mystery. I would love to see the numbers that dictate Aaron Hicks must hit third in the lineup. Because whether you want to talk about OPS plus or any of that crap, that is a classic case of your analytics being able to say whatever you want them to say. You know how people point to stats and say, well, they can be manipulated anyway. That is a stat that is being manipulated. You have got Stanton and Judge, who we talk about how hard they hit the ball, and we know how good of players they can be, but we know what their flaws are. And it's purely based in health, and that's a big, big flaw. It may not be their fault, but it's a big, big flaw. You have Gleyber Torres at shortstop, who, after a breakout year 2 years ago, came in out of shape last year. I still think is somebody that you would want to build around, but's out of position. Shouldn't be playing shortstop. We all know it. The Yankees are not going to back off of it for a while because they don't want to hurt his feelings and ruin his confidence. Listen, that's fine. Hurting feelings and ruining confidence, that's not what the regular season is supposed to be about. The regular season is supposed to be about winning games. You brought in Rougned Odor, who I love for his toughness, okay? But he's been an underperforming player for the last few years and does not give you any flexibility. All he does is give you a left-handed bat with some pop, but he can only play second base. So as a result, you move Tyler Wade, a guy who can play around the infield a little bit, specifically at shortstop, and you moved him out. You've got Gary Sanchez. We don't even have that discussion, okay? I know how people are so fired up by how he started, but it's quieted down a bit, and I haven't heard from you. Gio Urshela is now your backup shortstop, which, okay, that might work a little bit, but that's your backup shortstop. So you're moving more positions to fill a potential problem. Like, think about that for a second. You already have Voit out. Jay Bruce has done little to nothing. Still doesn't look comfortable at first base. He hasn't been terrible, but he hasn't been good. And so you have LeMahieu, who, thank God, gives you an incredible flexibility to move guys around if you needed to, if something happened to Gleyber. And then you've got Clint Frazier, who's out of the lineup simply because he's not hitting. And Brett Gardner can at the very least go and chase down a fly ball that there's no way in hell Clint Frazier would be able to get. So just looking at today's lineup, that's today's lineup. You can see how flawed they are from front to back. And we haven't even touched on the starting pitching. Guys, it's great to improve your bullpen, okay? But you can't continue to ask them to give you 5 and 6 innings a day. You can't do it. Herman was awful, has been bad his first two starts. Corey Kluber has been bad his first two starts. He is your number 2 starter. I told you. $11 million allocated for your number two starter who has barely pitched in the last 2 years and is a shell of what he was when he won the Cy Young. A shell. Am I overreacting here to all of this in the early part of the year? Maybe. But I feel like there's a bad moon rising here for the Yankees. I really do. And I'm not saying they're not going to make the playoffs because, well, the Baltimore Orioles still exist. You know, if you took the Baltimore Orioles out of the American League, off the Yankees' schedule over the last few years, just call it what it is. The Yankees are a slightly above average team. I mean, they're like, they have won 75% of the time over the last 3 to 4 years when they've played the Orioles. And that's not an exaggeration. That's an actual number. So it's like padding your stats, right? You look a whole lot better when you can beat the daylights out of a bad team. And that's what the Yankees are. And that's what we see right now. The Yankees are not a great team, guys. They're not. They're above average. And for what they are supposed to be, that's not good enough. And they're constructed poorly. I asked this question the other night. When you were with Aaron Judge a year and a half ago, what would the Rays have done? The Rays would have traded him and loaded up on pitching. Because, yes, partially about money, but a big portion of that would also be a baseball decision, understanding that Aaron Judge can't stay healthy and they may be better off getting all of that in return right now while they could. Brian Cashman should be wearing a little bracelet that says WWRD. What would the Rays do? And ask yourself that question when you're evaluating where you are. This is a team that is poorly constructed, but I do believe it's actually fixable to a degree in season. But a lot of that just depends on players getting better at what they don't do well. A lot of that depends on somebody like Gary Sanchez, who just frankly has defensively never been very good. We could talk about how hard he works, that's fine, but when you see him twice in one game, one time not run out what was a hard hit ball that he either thought was going to get caught or was gone, but I think he thought it was going to get caught the other day. Or, you know, between first and second the other night too, same thing. Like, you can't be that guy. You can't be Aaron Judge and every slight little tweak that you feel, you decide whether or not you're going to play. You have to make an interior decision of just frankly playing through a lot. Talk about the rib from last year. Okay, that's great. He played through an injury. Mm-hmm. I think that's all in his head right now. I think Giancarlo Stanton has to find ways to play through things. Are you hurt or are you injured? You can't convince me that there aren't times in the last couple of years where these guys have been hurt and not injured, and it's in their heads. I'm not saying they're soft. I would ask the question if they are. But you also have to be able to answer whether or not you're willing to go play through everything right now because you're a little spooked when you feel something that's not quite right. Everybody's going to have that. It's fixable, but it's fixable from the inside. That might be asking too much. Are the Yankees flawed in their construction in your mind? Is there any reason to expect anything different from the results this year than we've seen over the last 4 years. Because if there is, I don't see it. Please enlighten me as to where that is.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Mets on the docket as well. Tarp is coming off the field. We'll keep you updated on that situation. Yankees are playing at 1. Let's roll the baseball calls right now. Let's get them going with 800-919-3776. We'll get to the Knicks here in just a little bit as well. Let us go to Steve in Bayport to start things off this afternoon on 98.7. Steve, what's up, baby? How are you?
Good. How you doing, Chris?
I'm great.
I was going to say, I think the downfall to the Yankee team was when they signed Stanton, when they should have been signing a top-notch pitcher, so there goes all that money. We have no lefty hitting, and they decide to get rid of Didi, who can actually play shortstop.
Yeah, that's a very fair point, and I think it's something that we overlook, is that they just assumed that you had Torres was going to be able to play short, and somebody very close to the situation right when they were in the middle of the 2019 season, that's when they got rid of Didi, right after 2019, that said that there were plenty of people in the organization that were convinced he couldn't play short, that Torres couldn't play short. So it's not like it wasn't something that was on their minds already. Hey, look, if Didi wanted the long-term deal and he ended up signing short-term, you know, they could have gone back to it this year. It would have made so, so much of a difference for them to have Torres at second and Didi at short and be able to have LeMahieu playing first base. You could have traded Voit this offseason.
Yeah, I think they think, like, I don't know, I think they were thinking, like, Didi's too animated with his emojis at the end of the game and all that. They just don't like that.
I'm sorry, they let go of Didi because of his emojis?
You know what I'm saying? Like, he's too animated for the Yankees. Like, to me, he's a great cheerleader in the dugout, and I love that. But I don't think the Yankees like that.
Yeah, I don't buy that at all. Thanks for the call, Steve. Not in the least do I buy that. I think the Yankees do like a guy that provides leadership, and Didi provided a degree of leadership and fun. No, I don't think the Yankees want their team to be all corporate all the time. Do they want them to look like the 86 Mets? Probably not. But Didi's emojis after the game and his animated behavior is not why he is not here anymore. Whew, deep breath. Earl Brooklyn is next on 98.7 ESPN. Big Earl.
What's up, Chris?
How you doing, baby? Today? What do you got for me today?
I'm so pissed off at the Mets, man. Rojas and his nonsense. Conforto keep got runners on base. Can't put him to the next big contract. This is crazy.
Do you want me to give you some good news? Do you want me to give you some good news about Michael Conforto?
You can. I'm listening. I'm all ears.
They dropped him to sixth in the lineup today.
What that means? That's even worse. Because now if the third, fourth, or fifth batter get on base, he ain't driving him in. He's striking out.
You got to look for some positives. I mean, they're dropping him to sixth. At the very least, you've done something to address the situation. They're not benching him yet.
The six hole usually average about 80 to 8, about 75 to 89 RBIs a year. This guy leaves runners on base every single game. Bases loaded, one out. Swing and miss. Second and third. One out. We need a fly ball. We need a ground ball to right to get the this analytics is killing us, man. It is killing us.
I don't think it's the analytics that's killing you. I think it's Conforto in a big slump right now that's killing you. And I'll get to the DeGrom part of this here shortly. But on the Conforto part, I just don't see where Michael Conforto is going to be worth investing in for the long term, primarily because he's an incredibly streaky player. You know, when he's going, he's going. But when he's in the dumps like he is right now, it gets ugly. And look, I don't deny that he's a really good player when he's right, but I don't feel like Michael Conforto is somebody that you want to invest $200 million in for the long term. Appreciate the phone call. I look at him and I see somebody that when he goes right is really, really good. But when he's not going right, he's, you know, not good. I might be understating it a bit. I just don't like the streakiness factor. And he's only driven in over 90 runs once in his career. You know, I get the Scott Boras notion of the whole thing. But, you know, Scott will take the numbers, as we've talked about, and make them say anything he wants to. So when you get the big booklet this coming offseason about why Michael Conforto is so awesome, I would toss it aside. It doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot. 800-919-3776. Let's hit James in Staten Island next. 98.7 ESPN. James, what do you got for me, brother?
Hey, Chris, happy Sunday. My thoughts about Stanton are very, very simple. He won an MVP when he was not half a ball player, when he was running around in left field, whether he's a good left fielder or not. Average, I guess, is the way you would say it. But I think he has to be a full ball player. He's got to get his juices flowing the whole game. I think that has a lot to do with his mental ability at the plate. And I also think it has to do a lot with his just psyche, having his body actually working instead of sitting down for most of the 4 hours that the game is going on. So in my mind, I would forego a little bit of defense.
Here's the problem. They look at it now, though, as if it's somebody, when you have a guy on his legs that much during the game, it actually doesn't benefit him. It works against him. And as much as we want to look at Judge and say, well, he plays a really good right field, he does, but for how long?
Yeah, with Judge, you know, it's for some reason it seems to be above his waist. You know, he gets his rib cage hurt, he gets the oblique strains. You know, with Stanton, it's his lower body, it's the quadriceps, it's the calf muscles. Either that, or they just don't know how to stretch like they really should. I don't think professional athletes really should be getting hurt this much, especially baseball players. It just seems really, really odd. You know, you see football players who run around all the time, and their leg injuries are due usually to catastrophic events. You know, blown out knees, blown out ankles, things like that. You don't hear so much about the muscle pulls in football, and they're always on their legs. In baseball, you know, it's the oblique. Because
I think
of the strain,
it has.
Of twisting.
I think in particular with these two guys, and thanks for the call, it has to do with the fact that they're massive. They're massive. They cannot help the fact that they are both, what, 6'6", or whatever they are. And they have, you know, they can try to be more flexible, as trying to do the yoga this offseason. Never before have I heard more about a trainer than I've heard about Eric Cressy working with them this offseason. It's all great. It doesn't necessarily have to be about lifting. It has to be about pliability and maybe, you know, just flexibility, all that stuff. I just think the way that they are physically built is always going to lend itself to being unreliable.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Looking at like 2019, for instance, the Mets were 14 and 18 in DeGrom starts. Of course, he won the Cy Young that year. If they won just four games more, if they went 18 and 14 as opposed to 14 and 18 in his starts, they're in the playoffs. They're in the playoffs. They beat out the Brewers for the wild card spot. It's astounding. And you can go through it. Again, the damage is done to DeGrom, yes, and that's unfair. But the bigger damage is really done to the team. And that's the bigger issue to look at. 800-919-3776. As I was talking about the Yankees, I mentioned the Mike Brasso comment. And, of course, we all know Brasso from last year when Chapman nearly drilled him in the head. He got suspended for it. And then, of course, Brasso got revenge when he hit the home run to basically close out the Yankees in the eighth inning in the ALCS. Now, Brasso the other day, with a team in the Rays that this season, after they trade away Snell and Charlie Morton's gone, nobody expects them to do very much at all. Okay? Nobody expects them to be a playoff team. The expectations for the Rays this season, middle of the pack at best, right? Mike Brasso the other day comes out and says, well, listen, we know the Yankees are a really good team. They're going to be right there with us all year long. They're going to be right there with us all year long. You know, the Rays were a team that people expected to maybe win 85 games if things went well this season. And they slough off the Yankees like they're nothing. They are not remotely concerned ever about facing the Yankees. Anthony in the Bronx is next on 98.7 ESPN. Anthony, what's going on, dude?
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm great, Tony. How you doing?
All right, let me get you off the speakerphone.
That would be nice.
Yeah, I got you off the speakerphone. I'm in ShopRite shopping, Chris. But listen.
You're in ShopRite?
As a 30-year Yankee fan, and understand that we have won more championships than any team in sports history, and I have given Brian Cashman a pass because every year, you know, we have a team that goes on the field that's capable of going to the playoffs and winning the world championship. But that time now has elapsed now because to your previous caller, and Brian Cashman has done a great job for us. Like I said, he feels a competitive team on the field each year. But now some Yankee fans, including myself, we want to go to at least a World Series and win another World Series. And the formula that Brian Cashman has put on the field has not worked. And there's an old saying, Chris, and everybody knows it, if you keep doing the same things and expect different results, it's insanity. And for the past couple of years, we have had the same formula. You've got to change the formula, Chris, because we're not going away this year.
Well, this is where we need to focus our energy for a moment, Anthony. This is where we need to focus our energy. And there is a truth among the Yankees front office, not among the Yankees front office, but among Yankee fans that I don't think gets really acknowledged enough. And certainly in the media, it doesn't get acknowledged enough. Brian Cashman does not get any sort of criticism. And it's amazing to me that that's the case, Anthony. And thanks for the call. Because ultimately, the person spending the money is the owner, but the guy deciding where that money is spent is the general manager. And to suggest that this team was going to be any different than the last few teams is absurd. It's absolutely absurd. What was the biggest move of the offseason? Bringing back DJ LeMahieu, okay, you had to do that. This is the guy that you know you would want up above anyone else on the entire team in any important situation. You had to bring him back. And you were fortunate to do it the way that you did it. Oh, let's all give you a nice round of applause. You got him to take $15 million a year over 9 years. Over 6 years. That's great, Brian. That's fantastic. What about the rest of it? You're also the guy that was willing to take on Giancarlo Stanton. You're also the guy that was willing to pay Corey Kluber $11 million. This team is not constructed well. It's not constructed well, and the guy who constructs it has done a bad job for a while for what the Yankees are. And it's funny, if you hear the little tone in what Anthony was saying and others have said, and Anthony was actually being critical of Cashman, to be fair, but puts out a team that's representative every year, puts out a team that competes every year. That's nice. Can we at least acknowledge that there's supposed to be a difference here? Brian did a phenomenal job a few years ago in 2016 when the Yankees were, in essence, not ready to compete for the long haul. and he was able to get it turned around pretty quickly. They have not won a championship since 2009 and have won one since 2001. One. Or since 2000, I should say. So what exactly are we supposed to grade the general manager of the New York Yankees on? Like, why do you get a lifetime contract? Why is that the case? I have said this many times before, and I believe it to be true. The media is very soft on Brian Cashman. They are. And I understand why, frankly. Because I've had plenty of interactions with Brian. Really nice guy. Guy who will return the calls of reporters and will give them insight and give them what they need. And look, it's foolish to think that reporters and columnists and talk show hosts, for that matter, at times don't have agendas based upon personal relationships or how you're treated by an individual or information that you get, all that kind of stuff. Of course there is. So why is it that somebody over the course of a 20-plus year period would be treated like that? I mean, I remember a few years ago when I first started working with Bart and Maggie, and Brian came in and sat with us for an hour on the air. An hour. And didn't say a word, didn't blink about being there for an hour. Because he understands that when you are willing to play the game, you will get the benefit of the doubt from the media more often and for people more often. I'm just tired of hearing about why it hasn't happened and about all the money they lost last year and why exactly it hasn't come together. I'm more interested in hearing about how it is going to come together, because you can talk about what's important, right? You can talk about being judged on winning and losing and winning a championship, and that's what it is in New York with the Yankees. It's a whole different ballgame. This is not Pittsburgh or Kansas City. You are expected to win the World Series. And when you don't, it's a disappointment, sure, but when you don't, it's honestly considered a failure. And that's not just the fans, that's inside the building. So why is it not acknowledged that somebody that's been in charge of constructing a team for 20 plus years, 25 years now, whatever it is, has not gotten it done but once over the last 20 years? And somehow that's okay. And now it becomes more of, let's just get to the postseason, and then, you know, it's a crapshoot. When did that happen? That's another one that I've heard a lot about behind the scenes, that the Yankees resigned themselves to the fact that you can build a really good team, but hey, anything can happen in the postseason. Like, when did that become a thing? 800-919-3776. He does not catch enough of the blame here. And it's not anything personal in this case. I like him a lot. But I just don't think anybody holds his feet to the fire. I really don't. And so when things inevitably go the way they're going to go this year, which is to get to the postseason and not win a world championship again, because they're just not good enough. They're not. And they're very flawed with how they're built, but there are a lot of bad teams in the American League. Then you're going to sit here and realize that they're going to throw Aaron Boone out, and he's going to be the one to blame, and it's time to move on. Because Cashman has become the fifth Steinbrenner. That's what he is. 800-919-3776. Listen, I'm not a Yankee fan, and it's frustrating to watch. I can't imagine what it's like for you.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Jordan Montgomery comes up and in and hits Meadows in the shoulder. Then an inning later comes up and in with a fastball. After yesterday, the Yankees hit Wendell, and it grazed his head. I don't know that they're trying to hit him in the head. Yesterday with Justin Wilson, I don't think that's the case. But both dugouts got warned. Both. So the Rays cannot do anything about it. Listen, I know you care about the Yankees here, but that's wrong. That is so wrong, it's not even funny. And one of the Rays broadcasters made an excellent point, and I'm going to read it to you right now. Lindsey Adler from The Athletic put it up there a few minutes ago, I believe, or maybe Christy Ackert did. Yeah, I think Christy Ackert did. Basically, it was along the lines that you're talking about somebody that is a command and control guy in Jordan Montgomery. Jordan Montgomery is a command and control guy. He comes up and in and drills him in the shoulder after what happened yesterday, and both dugouts get warned. That's absolutely absurd. Yeah. And it's not right because the Rays can't do anything about it right now. Meanwhile, game's tied 2-2. You just saw Gio Urshela hit one to dead center. That was just a monster. And Yankees have something else cooking. Oh, against Michael Wacha. Met fans will be quite familiar with that. 800-919-3776. I love what's going on with the Knicks right now. And it's not just the entire season or what we've seen. But if you've looked at the schedule since the All-Star break, you know that this has not been easy. Okay? They didn't go out and get any help. And I think that was a mistake because the guys who were here deserved help. They deserved to get some more scoring to help them out because Julius Randle has done everything and anything that you could want. So when you look back, since March the 11th, the Knicks went into the All-Star break 19-18. They are at 26-27 right now. So they're two games under 500 since the All-Star break. But factor in that they have going into the game against Memphis the other night, had lost 5 out of 6. And yet they go and win 133-129 in overtime. And they have a stretch in front of them, including tonight with Toronto, then the Lakers, then you're on the road at New Orleans and Dallas, and then New Orleans again, and Charlotte and Atlanta and Toronto and Phoenix. Like these, it is a legit, brutal second half schedule that the Knicks have to deal with. And yet they are hanging in there the way they are each and every night. I know this is not going to happen because I'm not naive enough to think it's going to happen. But Tom Thibodeau has got to get major, major consideration for Coach of the Year. He has to. This is a team that is, yeah, they're in the 8th spot in the East. And you'd think, no big deal. Well, we know what the Knicks have been for the longest time. And if you look at the talent level and you look at what Randle has become, but more importantly, you look at the development of RJ Barrett and the player that he is now and how he's shooting the basketball and what he's become. How do you not credit Thibodeau and his staff with a lot of that? You have unlocked this guy. He is a terrific young player. He has become exactly what they would have hoped that he would be, drafting him in the 3rd spot in every single way, and now he's clutch. I'm not saying he's going to continue to be that all season long or he's going to be a superstar in this league, but I'm comfortable in saying that RJ Barrett very much has the potential to be a star in this league. You know, a guy that right now is at 18-6, along with 3 assists, and on the year has upped virtually every number that you've needed to. And over his last 10 games, he's shooting nearly 50% from 3. I get it. You're going to see like Mike Malone win Coach of the Year. And what the Nuggets have done this season has been pretty impressive. You know, you're going to see Quinn Snyder win Coach of the Year because the Jazz are 40-13. Okay. I understand that. It's totally fine. Not against that. But what Thibodeau's done, at the very least, should have him in the discussion. No? I just love the way players have bought in. And it's not just the coach. This group of players has given you absolutely everything they have every night on the floor. And that's what has made it so enjoyable to watch in every way. It's been so long. And yeah, you've been in the desert and you've been looking at the sand and ready to drink the sand thinking it was water. And now you actually get to see what good basketball can look like even when you don't have the best talent in the world. Boy, just so, so impressive what they've done. And this may get away from them because, frankly, I've been expecting it with what this schedule looks like for it to get away from them. And losing 5 out of 6 made me think that the end was nigh, so to speak. Well, that win against Memphis the other night, that gives you hope. You've already seen, dare I say, everything you need to see to feel good about where it's headed. You know, you want to be in the playoffs. Ideally, if they finished in the 6th spot and out of the play-in round, that is an amazing, amazing season. As good as it could ever be hoped for. Frankly, just above and beyond what you ever would have thought. But just doing what they have done so far, if they end up in the 10th spot, I'll take it. And frankly, if they miss it by a game, I don't want to see it. I want to see the Knicks in the playoffs in every way possible. But I'll understand it if this schedule just becomes too much of a bear. I don't think they're going to be 5 games worse than the Raptors over the rest of the season. So that's the good news. For at least a 10 spot. But the schedule is not an easy one to contend with at all. 800-919-3776. Let's hit our guy, Brian in St. James next, 98.7 ESPN. Brian, what do you got?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Thanks. I'm good. How you doing? Call.
Good, man. Thanks. I'm a big Knicks fan, long time. You know, I kind of agree with everything you said. And, you know, part of the passion for me as a Knicks fan is, like, I'm a little different, I guess, is that I'm not one of these Knicks fans that don't care about the Nets. Like, I can't stand the Nets, you know? And what I'm wondering is, which I don't have the expertise like you do, are they not under the salary cap? Like, how do they keep coming up with the money? They keep getting all these players. Like,
because it's not a salary cap. It's a luxury tax. And the Nets are going to end up paying an awful lot of money in luxury tax.
That's is that what it is?
Yeah.
All right. And then one thing on the Knicks, I think they're hitting weapon that, you know, obviously the new regime has been unbelievable, but I really hope they keep Scott Perry in the building. Like, a lot of the moves he made last year are kind of paying off.
You know, well, whatever it is right now, there's no need to change it up, Brian. I appreciate the call because it's working. Because while there may be disagreements, there are disagreements in every front office. And that's what it's there. You're supposed to have smart people disagreeing. I don't know how much of a role Scott Perry has played here, okay? But, hey, guy drafted RJ last year. He does get credit if you're going to blame him on other things.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.